The joint hearing of the Judiciary Committees to order. I'm the chair on the Senate side, Senator Lisa McGuire, and to my left is Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, the chair on the House side. I'll introduce my members, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Peter Michicki, my vice chair, John Coghill, Senator Mia Costello, and we're all here present for the record. And I'll turn it over to my co-chair.
Thank you. And I will introduce my co-chair, Representative Wes Keller.
Vice chair.
Representative Neil Foster, Representative Cherise Mellett, and joining us is Representative Max Grunberg. And Representative Matt Klayman.
Excellent. Well, welcome, everyone. It's been a while since I've chaired the Judiciary Committee, so this is going to be fun. And, of course, we're starting off with an issue that is in the public domain recently, and that's the subject of the marijuana initiative and the legalization of marijuana. Representative Ledoux and I have worked extensively over the interim in preparation for how we'll handle the committee through the judiciary process. And we've come forward today with the first of a series of bills, which is the heart of the issue, Senate Bill 30, and that's the decriminalization of marijuana. We're going to hear the drafter explain why she chose the way that she has drafted it and have some healthy committee discussion about that. For any of you that followed the press conference this morning, I was asked that question by a number of reporters. Why not simply make it legal as opposed to allowing for a defense? So I think that'll be a subject of discussion this morning, and I look to all the members here for their input. Of course, it's a collaborative effort in lawmaking, and I suspect that the committee substitute will reflect all of our thoughts. We're going to start with an overview by two incredible staff people on the Senate side that have been working this issue very hard. Jordan Schilling, who's from my vice chair and good friend, Senator John Coghill's office, and Amy Saltzman from my office. They're going to give you a 35,000-foot view of this, the draft that we have today. And I just ask members to recognize that because we know the central issue is a debate around whether we have a defense or an affirmative defense or whether or not we simply make the conduct legal, that you allow them to sort of explain it and recognize that we'll move through the hearing and hear a variety of perspectives on it and then have committee discussion about whether or not we move into a committee substitute that reflects that. So that we don't spend all our time sort of drilling the staff down on that particular point. And then we're going to have Tracy Wallenberg, who's from the Public Defender's Agency. She'll give her perspective on the issue of keeping it as a defense or other methods. And then Hillary Martin, who's our lawyer from Legislative Legal, will also come forward. The invited testimony today, I'll just read briefly. Tracy Wallenberg, as I mentioned before, from the Public Defender's Agency, from the Department of Law, our department. You'll recognize Deputy Attorney General Richard Savadny. Welcome, Richard. He's been with us many years. Assistant Attorney General Casey Schroeder. Also, we know Casey for many years. Major Dennis Casanovas, who's with the Alaska State Troopers. He'll be online with the Department of Safety. So these are resources for the committee members here today. Bruce Schulte, he's with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. He'll also be online. And then we'll have Karen O'Keefe, who's with the who's the Director of State Marijuana's Policy Project, and again, Tracy Wallenberg, who's with the Public Defender Agency. The next hearing will be January the 28th on our side, 1:30 p.m. in the Belts Room to discuss the committee substitute. So with that, I'll call forward Jordan and Amy to testify. Thank you. Any questions from committee members before we begin? Okay. Welcome. And if you just state your name and put it on the record, even though we all know you, so that it's there for the public record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Amy Saltzman, and I'm staff to Senator Lisa McGuire. Just to give kind of a brief overview of what we did here, Senate Bill 30 revises Alaska's criminal statutes to ensure the public safety of our communities, and it's following the passage of ballot measure 2. So we've gone in to try to address some of the issues that passage has brought up as far as the criminal regulations. Senate Bill 30 provides clear rules for the public and peace officers. It criminalizes giving marijuana to a person under the age of 21 and manufacturing butane hash and minor consumption. The bill also conforms multiple definitions of marijuana that were in statute. There were three separate definitions after the passage of the ballot measure. And it also defines marijuana concentrate. So that's a brief overview of what we did. Jordan could provide a section-by-section analysis if that's the will of the chair.
Thank you, Ms. Saltzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jordan Schilling, work for Senator Coghill. And there should be a sectional in the members' packets, and I'm just going to run through it briefly. Feel free to interrupt me at any point for a question. Section 1 of the bill amends the misconduct involving a controlled substance in the fourth degree statute to conform with the ballot initiative that legalizes an ounce under certain circumstances, an ounce or under in certain circumstances. So the change here is just to clarify that we're talking about more than 1 ounce.
Okay.
Section 2 of the bill clarifies weights again to conform with the initiative and criminalizes furnishing marijuana to a person under 21 years of age and criminalizes the manufacturing of marijuana using a solvent-based extraction. We specifically exclude glycerin from that prohibition, but the rationale behind that is that there are certain ways to prepare a marijuana concentrate that can be dangerous. In Senator Coghill's district recently, there was actually an explosion. A residence exploded because the people living there tried to make what's called butane hash. That's the slang term for this type of concentrate. And that would make that kind of conduct a Class A misdemeanor. Section 3 of the bill amends misconduct involving a controlled substance in the sixth degree to prohibit a person under 18 years of age from consuming or possessing an ounce or less of marijuana, and this is a Class B misdemeanor. Section 4 of the bill creates a new degree of misconduct involving a controlled substance. That's in the seventh degree. It is a violation for consuming marijuana in a public place. I know that that is something that some folks have had some questions on. What does public place really mean? The definition for that can be found in Title 11. It's 1181-900, subsection 53. And it can also be found in your packet. I'll just read it for you. It's a public place means a place to which the public or a substantial group of persons has access to. And then it goes into a list, includes highways, transportation facilities, schools, etc. And again, that's 1181-900. Also in subsection 2, it is a violation for a person between 18 and 20 years of age to consume or possess 1 ounce or less of marijuana. The second part of that section relates to license holders, and I know there's nothing in this bill that creates a marijuana license. I believe that that's going to be dealt with in a future bill. But misconduct involving a controlled substance by a licensee simply states that an agent or an employee of the licensee may not, with criminal negligence, do a handful of things, you know, one being letting someone under 21 enter and remain on the premise, allowing someone under 21 to use marijuana within the licensed premise, and a couple other provisions that we can get into detail on if anyone has any questions. Section 5 of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. looking at the section involving misconduct involving a controlled substance by a licensee. And this is on page 5 of the bill, lines 22 and 23. With criminal negligence, that's the scienter requirement, mens rea. For the person who's actually delivering it, or allowing the person to remain on the licensed premises, et cetera, the employee himself, where is that covered, and what is the criminal conduct? Is it a Class A misdemeanor or felony? What is it?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that's a great question. I'm assuming that would be dealt with under the Mixed Six statutes, but Ledge Legal probably has the answer, and I don't.
I'd like you to monitor that. If they don't answer, please, through the chair, get us an answer in writing.
Excellent.
If that's okay.
You bet.
Chairman Ledoux.
Okay. I'm on section 5. And I'm looking at lines, beginning with line 16. If the charge is for possession, manufacture, or possession with the intent to manufacture, the possession or manufacture was of 1 ounce or less of marijuana, I mean, if they're going to be manufacturing it, wouldn't they be manufacturing it in quantums greater than an ounce? I mean, how could you conceivably manufacture something of an ounce or less?
Again, good question through the chair. You know, and if it pleases the chair, perhaps we could have Hillary Martin come up to the table and ask.
Absolutely. Hillary? If you just put your name on the record as well, Hillary. Hillary has been, first of all, I want to say a huge thank you to the legislative legal department. Most people in the public don't get to see them. They're behind the scenes, but they're public servants as well, and we thank you for what you do. They're lawyers, came out of law school, and could have made a whole lot of money doing other things, and they're serving the public. So thank you for being here today, Hillary, and it'd be great if we could ask some questions. So you heard the chairwoman's question.
My name is Hillary Martin. I'm with Legislative Legal Services. Madam Chair, so the Section 5 where we're talking about manufactured or possessed 1 ounce or less, this is actually the defense to the crime. And so the initiative allows a person to possess up to 1 ounce. And so this is providing a defense that allows for the possession or manufacture of up to an ounce or 6 plants, which is what the initiative lays out. So it's not a crime. This is the defense to the other crimes. And you're only, under the initiative, you're only allowed 1 ounce or 6 plants, 3 of which are immature. So that's why, that's what's happening in Section 5.
I'm confused. I thought that under the initiative, you were allowed, an individual person could possess up to 1 ounce. But this is for, and that's why it's kind of confusing to have this in defense language. But if you're manufacturing it, I mean, clearly the initiative contemplated manufacturing in greater quantities than 1 ounce. I mean, how could you do a business? And I mean, all you could have was 1 ounce of the stuff.
There. So the section you're referring to on page 6 is the defense for a person. There's a separate defense for someone who is licensed under 1738, which is the initiative. And so part of the issue, too, is manufacture includes growing marijuana. So under the initiative, individuals are allowed to have 6 plants. That technically is manufacturing. So you have to have a defense for up to 6 plants. There's a separate defense for someone who's licensed under 1738, which is the initiative.
And can you point us, Hillary, not to interrupt you, but I think I'm understanding how you're answering the question. So Section 5 is the individual use, and an individual, much like following the Raven Act, is allowed to manufacture, if you will, or grow their own plants. And so this defense includes possession, manufacture, possession with intent to manufacture, or the possession or manufacture, and that's that broad defense given to the individual user who's over 21, not in a public place. Then you're referencing a separate area, which would be a license holder. That whole licensing regimen has not been decided yet. Hopefully, it will be within the next year here by a marijuana licensing control board. And could you point us specifically to the page in the bill where you're talking about the manufacturer who would make more than the 1 ounce?
Yeah, it's on page 7. It's still in section 5. It's subsection C, so it starts on page 7, line 20. And basically, if you're licensed under 1738 and you're acting in compliance with that license, you have a defense to 040 to 060. It's misconduct in the 4th, 5th, and 6th degree.
Got it. Okay, is that clear to other committee members, at least in the draft before us? Irrespective of the committee substitute, this will be one of the challenges that we have is sort of identifying who the person is within the process as we move forward. So at least we understand where the individual is protected and now where the license holder will be protected as well.
I get it.
Okay.
If I may, Representative Gruberg had asked a question earlier about the criminal negligence for the a number of crimes related to people who are under 21. And if I understood correctly, that's a Class A misdemeanor. So if they do these things with criminal negligence. Did you have a
May I?
Representative Gruenberg.
Ms. Martin, my question was, it says here what the crime is for somebody who is a licensee, and I'm on page 5 of the bill. My question was, what is the level of the criminality, and where's the statute that criminalizes the actual person who lets the person under 21 on the premises or sells them?
The section says either an establishment or an agent or employee of the licensee.
So it is the same standard for the actual employee as it is for the owner of the establishment. And the mens rea, the criminal intent language, is with criminal negligence, which is not recklessness, but not mere negligence, something in between, right?
To the chair, Representative Gruberg, yeah, criminal negligence, it's lower than recklessly.
And higher than regular negligence.
Well, in the criminal statutes, they recognize four levels, and criminal negligence is the fourth one.
Please, for those of us who aren't as familiar as you are, take us through it, if it's okay.
So, and just to clarify for the public that's watching or people in the room who don't have their Juris Doctorate degree, in the discussion that's going on here. So the discussion is about mental states. And so we're talking about intentional crimes, felony, misdemeanor, intentional crimes. So there's a mental state associated with that. In this case, it's criminal negligence. And Hillary Martin is about to read what that mental state is.
Yep. So through the chair, the definitions are found in 1181-900 for anyone's interested. There's intentionally and then knowingly, recklessly, and with criminal negligence. The definition of criminal negligence is when the person fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. And it has to be that it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in the situation.
So if I may, so the standard is the same for the owner, even if the owner happens to live in L.A. or where, as it is for the person who's actually doing the selling, right?
Right, yeah, through the chair, the crime right now, it's either the establishment licensed or the agent or employee. So the person who does it or the establishment itself.
And that's the same standard we use for people who serve alcohol to people who are underage, too. criminal negligence is all through Title IV, right?
Yes, and this language is modeled from one in Title IV, so it's similar.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Senator Wilikowski, and then Representative Klayman.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I understand this affirmative defense correctly. So the Supreme Court has ruled that the people of Alaska have a constitutional right to possess a certain amount of marijuana. The people of Alaska have voted to allow a certain amount, 1 ounce or less of marijuana. But we're going to give government the ability, the police the ability to go out and arrest people for carrying that amount of marijuana, handcuff them, put them in a police car, take them to jail, lock them in jail, have them post a bond, have them go potentially through a jury trial while they assert that it's an affirmative defense that they can possess marijuana. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, currently it's a defense in the bill.
And just to clarify, it's not an affirmative defense. That was one draft of the bill. Currently it's a defense.
A defense, yes. Technically that is a possibility. Defenses or affirmative defenses are something that are in our statutes currently. Medical marijuana is currently an affirmative defense. The Supreme Court under Raven has allowed possession of a certain amount for adults in their home. Technically, there's nothing stopping a police officer from arresting someone for possessing that amount now. But it's I think it's a low risk that people are going to be arrested for possessing possessing an ounce or less. This is set up to be a defense to the charges of misconduct involving a controlled substance. And so if someone is acting within the bounds that the initiative set out, they have a defense to that prosecution.
This would probably be a good time. I'm going to go to Madam Chairwoman Ledoux, but before I do, I think we've gotten through the 35,000 feet as much as committee members are going to let you to, which is what I anticipated. And so thank you. And be prepared if you wouldn't mind standing by in case anyone else has a question on the sectional. You made it 75% of the way through, so I would give yourselves a B+. And to the heart of the issue, which I figured we would spend the bulk of the committee time on. And again, Ms. Martin, I want to be clear that the public understands that we're not putting you on the spot. You're the legislative drafter. You're the attorney that was assigned to this issue. You've given it your best shake using your Juris Doctorate degree, comporting with the guidelines for drafting statutes. And so please don't feel at any moment as if we're attacking you. You are not the initiative sponsor. You're not in any way a political entity. So thank you for being here and being gracious. But I think this would be a good moment if you felt comfortable to explain to us why you chose this method of drafting the bill as a defense.
Sure. Through the chair, I think that broadly speaking, the initiative, it left marijuana illegal in most cases. And then you have certain circumstances where it's not illegal. Possession of an individual of an ounce or less, someone who's licensed under the initiative. Those situations are legal, but other things are still illegal. Possession of more than an ounce, giving marijuana to someone under 21, growing or selling without a license, those things are all still illegal under the initiative. So what I did to try and solve some of the differences between the initiative and the current criminal statutes involving misconduct and involving a controlled substance was to keep that same structure so you can still prosecute people who are not acting within the bounds of the initiative, and then creating this defense to prosecutions if they're acting in a way that's consistent with the initiative. So in creating the defense, I use language from the initiative, so 1 ounce or less, 6 plants, where the idea that the property has to be lawfully in their possession, all of that comes from the initiative. Defenses or affirmative defenses, there's something that is is used in statute is used in the criminal statutes. In fact, I mean, the misconduct statutes, misconduct involving controlled substance statutes currently contain some affirmative defenses already. Medical marijuana is an affirmative defense. Often it's something that is knowledge that's in the hands of the defendant, and it's easier for the defendant to prove. A really easy example is when we used to require a permit to carry a concealed weapon. It was a crime to have a concealed weapon, and it was an affirmative defense that you were licensed, or you had a permit. And so generally that's how it works. It's like, well, if someone is licensed under the initiative, they're licensed to sell marijuana. You know, they're the ones that are in the best position to know that they're licensed. And so that's how I initially structured it.
Fair enough. Madam Chairwoman.
Well, I share some of the same concerns of as Senator Wilikowski does, and I realize that you've stated that it's a relatively low risk, but it still seems to be some sort of a risk. And I have a problem understanding why this couldn't be done in the same way that alcohol is done. And I don't think that to an alcohol crime, if somebody was carrying a bottle of alcohol, that there'd be an affirmative defense situation. Why can't we do it in just the same way?
Madam Chair, there are a number of different ways to approach this. You could, initially, the idea is keeping marijuana as a Schedule 6A controlled substance and trying to keep that structure that existed. You could certainly change that.
And so I just want to be clear. I mean, alcohol, really, we don't call it a Schedule A controlled substance, but it actually is pretty controlled. I mean, you have to sell it in a regular liquor store. You can't sell it in a grocery store. I mean, there are laws relating to the age and so forth. So while we don't classify it as a controlled substance, we still do have the Alcohol, Beverage, and Control Board. So we could do it in a different way.
Madam Chair, yes, sir. There are different ways to do it. This is an initial approach. If the committee decides they want to go another route, I just dropped it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for taking the first shot at it.
Yeah, and we appreciate it, Ms. Martin. And I know you've worked extensively with Jordan and Amy to try and figure out the best way, you know, to draft it. And sort of the way I explained it was, it would be a bigger bill to put all the things in there that would be illegal as a result of if we were just implementing the initiative. It'd be a lot bigger bill than to simply make a defense to the one circumstance of a 21-year-old Alaskan using up to an ounce. But that's a question for the committee, and certainly you're going to hear testimony about it, and it's one way of approaching it. So, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if we did take a different approach, let's just say we took the Title IV, which is the alcohol statute, and tried to mirror the way that that has been regulated, that would be pretty much a rewrite to mirror the whole Title IV, would be my guess, which would be significantly different than taking this approach. Do I understand that correctly?
Senator Coghill, through the chair. Yes and no. There's a number of choices that would have to be made. There still are some differences with alcohol. Possession is a big one. You can possess any amount of alcohol you like. That's not true of marijuana.
Caveat would be if you were in a damp or dry community, yeah. Or a minor.
A major decision that would change how things got drafted is whether marijuana is going to remain a controlled substance. There are a number of very large consequences that follow from that decision. And then it would depend on the crimes that are currently in Title IV and how well they fit. It's not simply going to be straight mirroring what crimes exist in Title IV.
Senator Coghill.
And one other question that arises in my mind, in having listened to the the project sponsors and all the questions that have arisen is we still live in a land where the federal government finds this as a controlled substance and illegal under a lot of circumstances now that we find it for sure legal. And so that puts us in a little bit of a conundrum on describing it as a non-controlled substance. So I tend to favor this approach only for that. However, there are other things that we have to do. If we take it out of a controlled substance, would that give us any more liberty in the transportation issue? Because in Alaska, flying, using riverways, and using highways that are federally funded all of a sudden becomes a big deal. And so my guess is, even if we took it out of the controlled substance, that would not change how we're viewed under the federal eye.
Senator O'Connell, through the chair, that's correct. We regardless of what we do, it's still a controlled substance under federal law.
Thank you. This is the heart of what we're dealing with here, and thank you for the questions. I'm going to go next to Representative Clayman, but before I do, I want to acknowledge that Representative Culver is newly elected here in our audience. And am I missing any other members of the House or the Senate? Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today. Representative Clayman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I notice in Section 13 there are substantial number of sections being repealed by this, and several of those are the sections that were actually adopted as part of the initiative. What's the logic what's the logic behind basically repealing everything the voters seem to have voted to do?
Representative Clayman, through the chair, those are the sections that are incorporated into the affirmative defense. So,
Is it defense or affirmative defense?
I'm sorry, it's a defense, yeah. 020, if you want me to go through, 1738-020 is the personal use provision where you can possess an ounce or less of marijuana, you can grow and transport six plants.
Madam Chair, if I may interrupt.
Yes,
just
Senator
Crockett. Clarification. Isn't it also true that in repealing, you're restating? And I just wanted to be clear to the representative that in repealing, you're not taking the statute totally out, but you're adding the accountability measures in there for misdemeanor. And so you might want to just clarify that.
Yes. Those are all they're either in the defense or they're in the bill. For example, 1738-040 is the public consumption, and I made that misconduct in the seventh degree. So it doesn't need to be, since I moved into 1171, we're just repealing it from 1738. And then 020 and 030 have to do with personal use and cultivation, and that language is all incorporated into the defense.
Through the chair.
Yes, Representative Clayman.
As I understand it, what really this kind of discussion we're having today is, should we be doing what the voters at some level say in 1738-020 and 1738-030, where the voters basically said, you can do this. Under this proposal, we would be saying, you can't do it, but then you can try to come up with an excuse saying that you're allowed to do it anyway.
Representative Clayman, I think that's one way to describe how the defense works. I obviously can't speak to enforcement. I think that it has worked very well for medical marijuana. But that's, again, not my decision, really. It's just a choice in how to.
Great questions. And we'll also have, I'm going to get here to members, but just to remind members that we do have the Department of Law here, and I'm going to ask Rick Savadny to come forward next, just to let you know you're on the hot seat next. And that's a great question for the Department of Law in terms of how prosecutions have moved forward. And then I'm going to go to other members. It just occurs to me, though, really quickly on this point, that if you go the other route that we're talking about and you consider criminalization, you've got the Raven Act to deal with. And I wondered if you'd thought about that. So you've got the threshold of the initiative, which says 1 ounce, and that's a commercial relationship, and possession as well by someone 21 and older. Then you have the Raven Act, which is the Supreme Court ruling since 1974, says 4 ounces. And that, of course, doesn't allow for commercial transaction, but it's individual use under the right of privacy in your own home and growing. So I wonder if you've thought about that, if we go the other route and we begin to criminalize the way you'll hear the initiative sponsors and others say they'd rather have it not be a defense. So straight up, if you're 21 and older, much like alcohol, and you're using marijuana in the state of Alaska, so long as it's not a public place, so long as you're not a minor or distributing to a minor, and those are the rules so far, whatever the regulatory board comes up with later, then you're okay. Then this committee, my assumption is, we'll have to then consider what happens at 2 ounces and 3 and 4. And I wonder if you've thought about that.
Madam Chair, the Raven issue is a question just by the existence of the initiative. Raven said that adults could possess small amounts of marijuana in their home. A later case said 4 ounces was acceptable. Arguably, 18-year-olds under Raven can possess small amounts of marijuana in their home. And you have the 4 ounce limit. The initiative says you have to be 21 to possess, and it says 1 ounce. I don't have a good answer for how those two work together. In this draft, at least, I just went with the language from the initiative. But Raven is simply an open question.
Okay, thanks. I just want to put that on the record, because for all the people that I am appreciating the response, which is, why make a defense? Why not just simply say it's legal? It's a little more complicated than simply that, because the flip side is true. Then you have to create illegality to things that might have been sort of nebulous up until this point. So I have Representative Grunberg, Representative Millett, and Senator Costello. Am I forgetting anyone? Okay.
I'm sure. For the staff, the copy of the initiative I have is in the packet, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, because it appears that we only have the odd numbered pages. Oops. We don't have the even numbered page, and I would ask if some member of the staff or assistant staff can make sure that you distribute the even numbered pages so I can see what's going on. The question I really have I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Is there a difference between a defense in the law of Alaska and an affirmative defense? I have heard in the past of something called an affirmative defense, which flips the burden of going forward onto the defendant and raising at least a quantum of evidence sufficient to raise a triable issue. It doesn't shift the ultimate burden of persuasion, but it does flip at least the burden of going forward. First of all, am I right in that? And secondly, is this, quote, defense a new animal? What does it mean? Where is it found?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, there are affirmative defense and defense. They're two different things. They are defined in 1181-900. An affirmative defense, the burden is on the defendant to establish the defense by a preponderance of the evidence. Basically 50% plus one. Mm-hmm. A defense is where evidence is admitted which places the defense in issue, and then the state has the burden of disproving the defense beyond a reasonable doubt.
So, I see, and that's under sub 19 here.
Correct, and mm-hmm. Affirmative defense is B2.
Is what?
B2.
B2. If I may continue.
Yes.
It looked to me, from what I can make out, in the initiative itself, it uses the language, it is an offense if such and such a thing occurs, like under sub B. It shall not be an offense for seizure under certain circumstances. Does that not imply, as a matter of law, that the initiative intended the issue to be one that must be proven by the prosecution beyond a reasonable doubt? Where is your legal underpinning for changing that to a defense? It seems to me that when they say it's an offense or not, That means the burden is on the prosecution.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, the initiative does say it's not an offense under law. There is a definition of offense in 1181, whether that would apply or not, but it simply means conduct that you can, that is a crime or violation. You can be sentenced of imprisonment or a fine. Again, it's a this draft creates a defense to the misconduct involving controlled substance statutes. It's a choice that's made. It's certainly not the only choice that's available. This is what the current draft does.
If I may say one final thing, I understand that's the definition, but it's used in a slightly different sense, in the sense of defining a crime as opposed to allocating the burden of proof. They're used in different ways, right?
Representative Grunberg, I don't really know. The initiative says it shall not be a criminal or civil offense under Alaska law.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I would simply argue it probably means offense in the sense of a crime.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I have Representative Millett and then Senator Costello.
I'm good.
Thank you.
Thank you, through the chair. I think actually the most important decision that we have to make as a committee, if I'm not incorrect, is whether or not we go this defense route. And I just wanted to say for the record that I think it's really important that we follow the intent of the initiative. The fact that this legislation came to us in the form of an initiative is significant. And I'm just curious, Hillary, if did you speak to counterparts in other states when you chose to go this defense route? And then also, is it possible to see what an alternative might look like?
Yeah, Senator Costello, through the chair. I personally didn't talk to anyone in other states. The model I used actually was medical marijuana, which created an affirmative defense after the initiative was passed. So that was just the initial idea. This is one approach. There are certainly others, and that's your decision. So,
thank you,
Representative Millett, and then Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question goes back to the medical marijuana, remodeling the legislation after medical marijuana. How many people use medical marijuana? We're talking about a small amount of people that use medical marijuana in the state of Alaska versus a large group of people that will be now, after the initiative is in place, using marijuana. So I would guess that the medical marijuana statutes have not been tested like this statute will be tested. So my fear is that modeling it after something that is, there's such a small user group, and now we have a much larger user group, do you think that we're setting ourselves up for a lot of litigation? And it just...
Representative Millett, I think you're likely true that the number of people affected by medical marijuana is smaller than, there are some conflicts between the initiative and the current misconduct involving controlled substance statutes. This is the current approach taken to try and resolve all of that. Giving people a defense to these crimes as set out in the initiative. I can't necessarily predict what future litigation might come up. It may be that there will be litigation in any event. I don't really know. That's more of an enforcement.
So, Ms. Martin, we're going to give you a chance to draft the other way. I'm sure you can recognize that we're leading up to that moment. So you get two auditions on Broadway, and they're both going to be fantastic because you're a great young lawyer, and thank you for your work again. I just want to make sure you recognize we're not attacking you, but we're looking forward to draft B, which will be the other alternative. So I think you can hear us calling for that. Yeah. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I just wanted to make a statement because I've already had a few calls from the home district. This is the first meeting on the first draft of an initiative that just passed, and I think there will be a lot of adjustments. But I haven't spoken to anyone on this committee that is not in full agreement that we're going to meet the intent of the initiative in its entirety. So bear with us, and I'm sure we'll
get there.
Yes. I just wanted to make that clear. I've heard a couple sort of doubtful comments from the committee, and that's not where we're going. So I think that's worth clarifying.
I appreciate that, Senator Machicki, and I've tried to clarify that, you know, to reporters and people. You've got two incredible staffers, obviously, as you know, a part of our teams to the right of you, and you know their passion as well to try and put the voters' will into effect, and that's what we're going to do. And you've got a great group of people here to help work with you. So, Madam Co-Chairwoman.
I was just going to ask, do we actually even know how many people are using medical marijuana, since neither any legislator or no administration, since the medical marijuana initiative was passed, has ever actually set that into play? We probably don't have too many statistics on that, then, do we?
Madam Chair, I don't know the numbers. I know that you have to register to use medical marijuana, so I'm sure that's a known number. I don't know it, but.
Well, and it's an interesting question in our office. There are, and Ms. Saltzman, I don't know if you recall the exact number of registrants. I think it's like 6K, something in that, or 5 to 6K. But the discussion that we had was whether or not people are really registering. And that's a whole other question. So we do have Bruce Schulte online, and I was going to turn to him because there have been two questions now from Representative Millett and Senator Coghill, and of course our Madam Chairwoman, about, you know, what is the state of this medical marijuana, how many people are using it. So I'm going to turn to Bruce really quickly to see, not to put you on the spot, Bruce, but you are my constituent, so I feel like I can. Mr. Schulte, have you been following the questions regarding the number of folks who are using medical marijuana, and can you answer that?
Good afternoon, Senator, and thank you for the time. Yes, I can speak to that. My understanding is that there are approximately 2,000 medical marijuana cardholders.
And I'm going to ask you to pause just for a second until we can turn your volume up here with teleconferencing. Just 1 second, Bruce. And also, would you, prior to continuing what you're going to say, if you could just state for the record how you wish to be associated today for the official public record in your remarks.
Sure. Okay. My name is Bruce Schulte, and I'm a spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation.
Okay. Thank you. And then just continue on. We're ready now for you. Thank you. We're a long way away from you.
My understanding is that there are approximately 2,000 medical marijuana cardholders in the state, and there are, by some estimates, there are roughly 2 to 3 times that number of people who have an interest or a need in medical marijuana but have chosen not to pursue the card for their own reasons. And I would agree with the earlier statement that represents a relatively small portion of the total consumers in the state, but not an insignificant number by any means.
Okay, and just to follow up on that, Mr. Schulte, no reason you would necessarily know this, but this has been your issue. Could you enlighten the committee, if you know, as to why Alaskans who are using marijuana for medicinal reasons would not be registering? What would be the deterrence there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The arguments that I've heard from folks in that position are several. One is they fear that doing so would bring unwanted scrutiny from law enforcement at various levels. And the other one, I believe someone stated that they were concerned that holding a medical marijuana card would preclude them from owning guns. Those are two of the arguments that I've heard.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, who is left in my queue for Ms. Martin? And then we're going to go, actually, before Mr. Savadny, we're going to go to Tracy Wallenberg from the Public Defender Agency. Oh, you have a question for Mr. Schulte. Okay, I have Senator Wilikowski. Nope.
Not for Schulte.
Not for Schulte. Schulte. Okay. So I have Representative Klayman for Mr. Schulte. And then, Bruce, you'll be able to offer testimony later on as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I will stay on as long as you like me to.
Thank you.
Mr. Schulte, my at least anecdotally what I had heard reports was one of the reasons you saw a smaller number of people signing up for the medical marijuana cards was partly viewed as a lack of facilities that you see in other states where the medical marijuana is for sale, that even though the people have the cards, there's nobody licensed to actually sell marijuana here in the state, and that's partly a result of the lack of any distribution network, which is apparently less of an issue in the lower 48. But that's more anecdotal, so I wanted to get your input on that because my sense is you know more than I do.
Through the chair, Mr. Klayman, thank you for that question. Yes, I would agree with that. I've also heard that argument from folks that are interested in medical marijuana, that there's a degree of frustration or perhaps resignation that though they may have access to a card, that there is no legal way for them to purchase the products.
Thank you. Okay, and I just want to note for the record, all members now have the full ballot packet that came with the initiative. Senator Wilikowski, you had a question for Ms. Martin.
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. On Section 1, where we're making possession of more than 1 ounce Class C felony, the Supreme Court has already said that under the Constitution people have a right to 4 ounces. And so are we violating the Constitution with that section? The legislature can't overrule the Supreme Court. A citizens initiative can't overrule a Supreme Court decision. So what's your take on that?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, you know, it's a existing it exists in the statutes currently, and this Section 1 deals with manufacture, delivery, and possession with the intent to manufacture or deliver, not straight possession, which is slightly different, but it Raven is still an outstanding issue that exists, and there's not much I can tell you about how that might work out.
Okay, any further questions at this time for Ms. Martin, Representative Groomberg?
This may be for Mr. Schulte, and I don't know if we want to reserve this when we have our own meetings, but I would like to get some more questions answered about what has been going on really with the medical marijuana program. I understand that people can't get it, and I definitely don't think that was the intent of the law. I know, secondly, that there are ways under the current law to add other kinds of physical diseases and conditions that can be added by regulation so that you can get medical marijuana for other things as well as those that are listed. For example, in Arizona, they have expanded it to include post-traumatic stress disorder. And with the increasing incidence of that, I would hope that we can take a look at that. And I don't need to spend our time now, but I would like to deal with that, because that is a serious problem.
I think it's an excellent point, Representative Groomberg, and I commended Mr. Schilling and Ms. Saltzman, an article that I just read from discussing the American Pediatrics Council coming forward with a recommendation of decriminalization at the federal level. And it was a really interesting article, and I'm happy to make copies and share it with all committee members. But it was a really interesting, a very human discussion about parents of those with epilepsy and autism, mm-hmm. and how certain forms of cannabis, particularly one called Charlotte's Web that's lower in THC and higher in some other concentrates, has been life-altering for their children. And So that's something that as we move forward, of course, Ms. Martin, your work is basically it's all marijuana this session. I'm hoping the director agrees, because I do think that the legislature has failed the public in implementing medical marijuana fully. The affirmative defense, again, forcing people to prove that, I don't think that's what was intended. And I think more to the point, when you look at the issue of minors who may be using that under the, again, the guidance of a physician and their parents, that's a whole another area that we're probably going to have to deal with. So my hope is that we will look at that, certainly for people whose basic health needs are being met. So I appreciate the point. Senator Coghill.
Thank you. And just to bring us back to this particular bill and the drafting style, so the initiative says, notwithstanding any other law, these things can be. And so this drives a narrow line, and then outside of that, the way I understand it, is controlled substance law that we have to deal with. And that's one of the reasons why either it works with controlled substance or it's exempt from controlled substance. Am I understanding correctly that that's what we're thinking through on drafting?
Senator Coghill, through the chair. Yes, that's correct.
All right. So we still have to deal with controlled substance outside of this initiative, because it's notwithstanding any other law, these things are true. That still leaves the other things to be true as well. And so we have to kind of have them mesh up somehow with this particular initiative. And so if we say under this initiative, notwithstanding any other law, we still are going to say if you do these things, Raven, notwithstanding, you have the right to defend yourself, but you could be charged under these. And that would also be true outside of this initiative, that if it's a controlled substance, we just have to make sure that we're consistent in how we apply that. And do I understand that correctly?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, that's correct. So
okay. That helps me.
And it's just more work, but I think it's probably the work that we ought to do. It's more specific, you know, and it's going to require us to think about, you know, above 1 ounce, what happens and how does that comport with Raven? It's going to require us to think about people who are under the age of 21 who are using it for medicinal purposes, medical marijuana purposes. I mean, it's all those things. And that's the way it was explained to me the very best was this is the simpler way of doing it, because you're just creating a defense that's in the initiative versus having to say all the other things are illegal because it's still a controlled substance, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, I have Representative Millett, and then I have Senator Wilikowski.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So this goes back to Raven. I mean, we're writing laws that are butting up against a decision by the Supreme Court. Obviously, the statutes will be found unconstitutional. So I guess we're back to, are we writing something that's unconstitutional based on Raven, on the age? I mean, there's a couple of other things in Raven that we're not taking into consideration here in this legislation. So I guess maybe something that would be helpful for the committee is to look at a side-by-side of what Raven, the Supreme Court decided under Raven, and what, you know, limits we're putting on. I mean, because the initiative, that was the one flaw of the initiative, if there were, you know, was that it didn't take into consideration the Raven decision when the initiative drafters wrote their initiative. I mean, what they were saying that we were putting in statute basically was making laws that would be unconstitutional. Am I wrong?
Representative Millett, through the chair. Raven says possession of up to 4 ounces in the home for personal use. The initiative does say, for adults, the initiative says 21 and over, up to 1 ounce. It's a conflict that is not been solved. I don't know. It's possible the court could reexamine the decision and say this is, you know, the people voted in and they were aware of this. It's possible. It's possible they'll say no. But currently all we know is Raven said this and the initiative says 1 ounce.
Senator Wilikowski and then Co-Chairwoman Ledoux.
Thank you. In Section 3, we are making possession of marijuana for someone under 18 a Class B misdemeanor. And in Section 4, we're making possession someone age 18 to 20 a Class A misdemeanor. Do you know what the comparable penalties would be for someone of those age groups for alcohol?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I believe and there's folks in the room that could correct me on this, I believe that the first two incidences of minor consuming alcohol are misdemeanor, violations with, I believe, some community work service, and I believe it's the third one, your third MCA, that gets you a Class B misdemeanor.
That's an excellent question. Okay, Representative LeJoux.
I just want to see if I may understand this clearly. The initiative doesn't really contradict Raven. The initiative isn't actually inconsistent with Raven. The initiative simply says, notwithstanding anything else, this is legal. Now, actually, with Raven, it probably should be, if we wanted to follow the ruling of the Supreme Court, it probably should be 4 ounces or less. But the initiative wasn't concerned with, you know, from 1 to 3. It was just concerned with 1. So it's not inconsistent, but we have the decision to make here as to whether we want to make the laws actually consistent in statute with Raven. Would that be correct to say?
Madam Chair,
I mean, we could implement the initiative, and there's nothing in the initiative that's actually inconsistent with Raven. It just simply doesn't go as far as Raven, as far as possession is concerned. Would that be a correct statement?
And go ahead and answer it if you choose, but what I'm going to do after I get to Senator Machicki is I'm going to move then to Tracy Wallenberg with the Public Defender Agency, and then Rick Savadny with the Department of Law. And I believe in both instances those two lawyers will offer a perspective about how Raven conflicts or does not conflict with the current draft of the bill.
Madam Chair, I think that is one way to look at it. Raven does say an adult can possess small quantities for their own use in their home, and then a later case said up to 4 ounces. The initiative does simply just say, notwithstanding any other law, someone who's over 21 can possess up to 1 ounce, can possess 1 ounce. That does still leave a conflict with Raven, but it does still leave a conflict with the current structure, I guess is a better way to say it, that there is still a question out there about Raven and how to actually address that.
Senator Machicki.
I understand what you're all saying about the conflict. I think it's relatively easily solvable as we move on in this process. I mean, the reality of it is Raven versus State, the weed fairy had to magically deliver this up to 4 ounces in your home. We're also regulating transportation and other things. I think
that's going to be your quote, by the way.
Veronica Pride is rapidly typing. Matt is over there.
Machicki is the new
as we work through this, I mean, I think you can meet the intent of the initiative, which is 1 ounce for transportation and then storing up to 4 ounces in the home and meet the intent of both without a conflict. And that should be the goal. We're going to run into these things as we work through it. But
I agree. Okay. Thank you, guys. Can you stand by, please? I know it's not probably what you'd prefer to do for the next hour, but please. Okay. And then I'm going to call on Tracy Wallenberg with the Public Defender Agency. Tracy is online. Ms. Wallenberg, are you there?
I am, Madam Chair.
Okay. So, I'm sure you have prepared testimony, and we'd love to hear that, but I hope and assume you've been following the committee questions and discussions. So obviously we want to know your opinion on the defense as a version. We want to hear your opinion on conflicts with Raven and so forth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. Can you guys hear?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today. For the record, my name is Tracy Wallenberg, and I'm the Deputy Public Defender for the Appellate Division here at the Public Defender Agency. Our position at the agency is one that it sounds like is shared by many committee members, or at least the concerns are shared by the committee members, that by retaining the criminal offenses in AS-1171 and creating a defense. This bill is inconsistent with the language and express purposes of the initiative and undermines voter intent. The first section of the Marijuana Legalization Initiative, which is 1738010, the voters declared that the use of marijuana shall be legal for persons 21 and older. It also states that one of those purposes was to allow law enforcement to focus on violent and property crimes. The next section, 1738020, then sets out exactly what acts are lawful and, quote, shall not be a criminal or civil offense, end quote. And another important provision, I think, of AS-1738020 provides that those acts which are lawful, as spelled out in that section, shall not be a basis for seizure or forfeiture of assets. By creating the defense, this bill contravenes both of those provisions of AS-1738020 and the intent set out in 1738010 that certain types of marijuana-related conduct be legal and that those acts as spelled out in 020 shall not be a basis for seizure, effectively a basis for arrest or for search. I do want to address a couple of questions that I think came up during the committee's discussion, and I hope they will be of help. There was a question raised, I believe, by Representative Grunberg about the difference between an affirmative defense and a defense, and I think that distinction was discussed, but I'll just reiterate in the event it's helpful. An affirmative defense puts the burden of production and persuasion on the defendant, and these are defined in AS-1181-900, as Ms. Martin said. A straightforward defense does not have the burden of persuasion, but the defendant still retains the burden of production. So under the current bill, as set up, the defendant would have the obligation of coming forward with some evidence in order to put the defense in play. This is problematic for two major reasons, I think. First, like I said, the burden remains with the defendant to a certain extent. Typically, when you have a criminal offense, the state has the obligation under due process guarantees to prove every an offense beyond a reasonable doubt, and the defendant has no obligation to present evidence or put on a defense. But if the conduct which is otherwise made legal in this initiative is set up as a defense, a defendant who just sits there and doesn't present any evidence will be convicted even though what he or she did was completely legal. And by put on any evidence, I mean either elicit evidence through cross-examination or, in many cases, potentially the defendant would be required to testify in order to meet the sum evidence burden of production before the burden of persuasion, that is the burden of disproving the defense, shifts to the state. So essentially, the way the bill is currently set up, a person who gets charged with conduct that might or that should otherwise be legal under the initiative, the person can't just remain silent necessarily. And setting it up as a defense also could result in different judges making different decisions about whether a defendant has presented some evidence sufficient to even put the defense in play. And that could result in inconsistencies around the state as judges interpret whether the sum evidence standard has been met. I think this conflicts with the provision, like I said, in 010 and 020 of the initiative that were intended that certain types of marijuana conduct, related conduct, shall not be a criminal or civil offense. And that leads into my second point regarding the ramifications of setting this up as a defense. I believe it was Senator Wilikowski who mentioned that setting it up this way would give police the ability to arrest for otherwise lawful conduct. And I do think that's the second big ramification of setting it up this way. It essentially allows for arrests for legal conduct, undermining the intent to set it up as legal, but also undermining the intent to allow law enforcement to focus on violent and property crimes. Officers, you know, don't necessarily have to look at a defense when they make arrests, and as a result, depending on how this law is enforced, it could result in inconsistent enforcement. The officers could also use, use or possession or manufacture of marijuana as a justification for further searches when there was no basis for doing that, and it could result in discriminatory enforcement. And like I said, I think this undermines the provision in 1738.020 that these acts, which were intended by voters to be legal, shall not be a basis for seizure. And that phrase, shall not be a basis for seizure, is really not replicated anywhere in SB 30. I think there's a potential quick and easy fix. I don't know that it's perfect. I don't think it's perfect. It certainly would require additional consideration of Raven. As Representative Klayman pointed out, this bill proposes to repeal 1738, which was enacted by the voters. One way of dealing with it could be to leave 1738 intact and simply add to the existing misconduct involving a controlled substance statutes except as authorized in AS 1738. You see that already. If you take a look at Section 1, you'll see that misconduct involving a controlled substance in the fourth degree, AS 1171-040A, it says, except as authorized in AS 1730. You could add, you know, except as authorized in AS 1730 and AS 1738. That's kind of a dirty way, I think, of incorporating the completely and without amendment the voter intent as embodied in AS 1738. What it doesn't account for, which the committees were just discussing, was Raven. I don't think that Raven is inconsistent with the voter initiative, and in fact, if you look in Section 1, 1738.010C of the voter initiative, that's just the first section there. It says, the people of the state of Alaska further declare that the provisions of this act are not intended to diminish the right to privacy as interpreted by the Alaska Supreme Court in Raven versus State of Alaska. And I think there is a way to reconcile them. Raven is both broader and narrower in a way than the initiative. As has been discussed, Raven allows for possession, provides that possession of small amounts of marijuana in the home is constitutionally protected under the privacy clause of the Alaska Constitution. And the Raven decision has been implemented and interpreted to mean up to 4 ounces in the home, which is obviously an amount greater than that permitted under the initiative, with the exception, perhaps, of possessing no more than 6 marijuana plants and possessing the marijuana produced by those plants. I'm not sure where that total would lead you, but, 4 ounces is obviously a higher demarcation than the 1 ounce, which is discussed in the initiative. But Raven doesn't permit possession, or doesn't protect, I should say, possession of small amounts of marijuana outside the home, which, of course, the initiative does. So while the fix that I proposed is quick, it doesn't account for Raven, and I think in a perfect world, the statutes would be redrafted to align with the initiative and to align with Raven so that it could be clear to the public and to law enforcement what exactly is legal and what isn't legal. But I think at least if you wanted to just simply say except as provided in 1738 as I originally proposed, that would preserve voter intent and voter language and make it clear to law enforcement exactly what statute, that is to say 1738, they need to look to in order to determine whether somebody, you know, has committed a criminal offense or not. I hope that's helpful, and I tried to cover some of the issues that came up during the course of the conversation, but I think the general point, the major point I wanted to get across is that creating the defense is not an issue, is not implementing voter intent. It is placing a burden on the defendant once arrested to put some evidence in play to prove that their conduct was legal. And I guess one other point I just wanted to make about that is it would result in the use of vastly more resources. Once a defendant is arrested, he or she, will be arraigned in court, court time, prosecutorial time might be required, and the person, and in fact many people, might be entitled to court-appointed counsel. And setting it up in this way, therefore, kind of uses resources in a way that may not be necessary given the initiative intent.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wallenberg. You did, in my opinion, address all the issues we asked, and thoroughly. I certainly appreciate it. Senator Michicki has a question for you.
Well, it's actually more of a statement. You can tell me if I'm correct or not here, but one of the other challenges of framing legislation as a defense is the fact that once there's a charging document made, they are on court view forever, even though they are found to be in perfect compliance with the law, and that will affect them in the future for employment and other issues. So it's a challenge going this way, I think.
Yep, that's another bill, another subject, but you're absolutely right. I've got Senator Wilikowski, Representative Groenberg, Senator Wilikowski, Representative Ledoux, and Senator Coghill. Okay, Representative Groenberg.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wallenberg, just very briefly, your testimony was covered a whole lot of things. Would you be willing to put that or a memo in writing, including citations to the authority for the proposition concerning whether the word defense does comply with the language of the initiative? Because otherwise, I'm afraid it'll get lost in the reliquies of time if we're not careful. Can you do that?
I'm certainly happy to put a writing together. I will run it through my boss, Quinlan Steiner, to make sure he approves of me passing it along.
And secondly, we are confronting something here that may well have been confronted by the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals in the past, but I can't tell you whether it has or not. And that is, let us say, as here, the initiative uses the term offense. And let us say we were to put forth a framework that involved the concept of a defense. Would it simply be a conflict between one law or another on the one hand? Or does the fact that the initiative was enacted in a constitutional manner, and the term offense was done through that constitutional mechanism, give it greater weight? In other words, would the fact that we changed it from an offense to a defense possibly render it unconstitutional? Not just illegal, but actually unconstitutional.
Through the chair, Representative Groenberg, I believe that it would be subject to constitutional challenge under Article 11, Section 6 of the Alaska Constitution, which governs initiated laws. It says an initiated law becomes effective 90 days after certification, is not subject to veto, and may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date. That provision also provides that an initiative may be amended at any time. However, there's case law from the Alaska Supreme Court which discusses that an initiative can't be amended to such an extent that it constitutes an implicit repeal. There's a case, Warren versus Thomas, that says an amendment of an act operates as a repeal of its provisions to the extent that they are materially changed by and rendered repugnant to the amendatory act. Here, the provisions of the initiative, I believe, would be materially changed by creating a defense when the initiative said that this conduct or certain types of conduct should not constitute an offense.
Thank you. And if that could be part of your memo as well, I'd be grateful.
Thank you. Thank you, Tracy. Senator Wilikowski, and then Madam Chairwoman Ledoux.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, these committees have spent a lot of times in recent years trying to figure out what the best balance is on nonviolent offenses, how you criminalize them. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on Section 3 and Section 4, where we're making possession by those under from the ranges 18 to 21, below 21, I should say, a Class A or a Class B misdemeanor, as opposed to what the way we treat alcohol offenses. And I want the right policy on this. I don't want to punish kids and have the black mark on their records for their lives. Is that a good policy? But at the same time, we want to make sure these kids aren't using marijuana. What's your opinion on how the policy works with alcohol? And would you, do you believe that's comparable, or that we can draw some suggestions from that?
Through the chair, I probably, you mean in terms of, just to clarify, treating these as sort of public defenses as opposed to treating them under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court?
Exactly. And also the level of punishment. Should it be a Class A, Class B misdemeanor? Should it be a fine?
Well, I'd have to go back and look more closely at the alcohol-related statutes. I know some of them are treated as adults. You know, a third MCA is treated as an I think it's treated in juvenile court, and the first two are in adult court, or vice versa. And there may not be consistency there. And a DUI is in adult court, or certain types of DUIs are in adult court. And I certainly think it's worthwhile to make sure that our policy, that the, you know, the legislature is consistent in terms of the level of offense that it's ascribing to underage people under 21. One thing I noticed about, and this might not directly answer your question, but one thing I noticed about sections 3 and 4 that were seemed somewhat backwards and may kind of lead into a reconsideration of these sections together is that section 3 makes it a crime, a mixed 6 crime, to use or display any amount of scheduled 6A controlled substances under circumstances not prescribed under AS 1171-065. And then 065 makes it a crime to use or display any amount of Schedule 6 controlled substance in a public place, and that's a violation. So in essence, the way this is set up is it's a violation to, I think the way I'm reading it, use or display marijuana in a public place, but it's a misdemeanor to use or display it in a non-public place, which seems somewhat backwards. And I'm not sure if that was the intent, or maybe just an oversight. But I think it's a discussion in terms of criminalizing conduct under age 21. It's a discussion worth having, and it's probably a discussion I should have with people who work in the juvenile area.
Thank you. If you could get back to that, back to us in future hearings, and if you get an opinion in time to incorporate it into your broader opinion that Representative Gruenberg has asked, that'd be great. And I know we've been in touch with Quinlan, and of course he can't be here today, but any thoughts that he had, if he were to co-author it with you, would be appreciated as well. Madam Chairwoman.
I was just going to ask you, Tracy, we've had some discussion today as to whether the initiative runs counter to Raven. Does our current law run counter to Raven? Is our current law inconsistent with Raven?
Through the chair, the current statutes do not take account of Raven. That's correct.
Thank you.
The current statutes, as I understand them, prohibit the possession of marijuana, which is obviously to a certain extent inconsistent with Raven, to the extent Raven protects possession of marijuana in the home up to 4 ounces.
I'm going to go to Senator Machicki, but before I do, if as you're writing your opinion, you'd consider referencing that point, that would be great. And then the other one is, as I made reference to earlier, the broader, that there are three different definitions of marijuana in current statute, some of which include hemp. And the question of whether or not, I don't know if you've had defendants or concerns about people being potentially prosecuted for derivatives, the hemp, and then also medical marijuana, and where you feel our statutes sit in comporting with defendants you may have in that area as well. Senator Machicki?
Just a quick one. This was actually for your consideration, Madam Chair. I know that there are certain people that generally view the riveting proceedings that are common to the Judiciary Committee. But I think it's fair to say that that spectrum will be somewhat expanded with this bill.
Yeah.
So what something that might be helpful is just a brief segment where we cover the level of offenses and the related penalties for the public to understand, because I think they're counterintuitive.
Excellent, excellent point.
Thank you.
Amy and Jordan, I think it's a great idea. You don't have to say anything now, but just to file away that I think you're right. We ought to have a broader hearing, given the fact that these hearings, one intent, of course, is for us to deliberate as members, but also for the public to have an opportunity to observe what we're doing out in the light of day and to weigh in. And it is, we do throw out statute numbers and terms and mental states and things like that that can be sort of confusing if you're watching from a distance. So I think that's a great point. Okay, so I'm now going to call up the Department of Law. And I see we've got Casey Schroeder and we also have Rick Savadny. They're both, one is Deputy Attorney General, that's Rick Savadny, and Casey is Assistant Attorney General for now. We'll see what she becomes in the future. I think she's got a bright future ahead of her still. Thank you. So welcome, and if you put your name on the record and offer prepared testimony. Representative Gruenberg made a great point, and I'll just say it as an overarching comment to all of the folks testifying. Next up will be Major Dennis Casanovas with the State Troopers Department of Public Safety, Bruce Schulte with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation, and then we have Rachel Young and Karen O'Keefe, the Director of State Policies for Marijuana Policy. If any of you could consider crafting your remarks into written format, that would really help us to think through, and also it helps the public to expand the public record. So I just ask that same thing for you today, if you can incorporate your opinions into a written memo to the Joint Judiciary Committees, we'd appreciate that.
Madam Chairwoman, women, my name is Rick Sabodny, and I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. Sitting to my right is Casey Schroeder, who is an Assistant Attorney General, and more importantly for these procedures, our legislative liaison. This is her first time speaking in that position, and it is our desire on these complicated issues of dealing with marijuana to speak with one voice. She's that voice, but because it was the first time, she decided that she needed a lifeline. And so she may be calling on me. But it'll be her who will be answering your questions. I would, just having heard kind of the debate, just like to give a few thoughts at the outset. If I may, this is a real complicated drafting issue. And it's complicated because the initiative is drafted in a way that's not part of our legal history. Our legal history is the Anglo-Saxon law is basically starts with the presumption that everything's legal unless it's made illegal by legislation. And so it's very hard to draft, and I think that's why you're seeing some problems when the initiative uses more the Napoleonic code, where you assume that everything's illegal unless the government makes it legal. So this is just kind of the opposite for the lawyers involved. So it's really hard to get a handle on. Second, the bill before you today is really only one part of a two-part package. The initiative deals with criminal laws, which the bill that you have in general, I think, is trying to deal with, at the same time setting up and regulating an industry. And this bill that you have before you does a little bit of both. So I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't tackle this issue and get it done before the initiative takes effect, but it presupposes that some things that you may or may not do with regulation. And that's another thing that makes it very difficult to draft. So kind of with those, let me just see, I had a couple more. With those kind of as just background thoughts about how this is different than almost any other piece of legislation that you see, because it's in the kind of the pulling out the European style as opposed to Anglo-Saxon style of law, that's what makes it difficult. But that with background may help you a little bit. I know Casey was asked to talk about. Come before you today and talk about the defense issues in the bill, and there's been a lot of questions about a lot of other areas, and so maybe it is good that she has a lifeline and can turn to me. For example, I don't know that many people in this room remember when you're asking all the questions about medical marijuana. Medical marijuana passed as an initiative in about 98 also. And the structure that's in the statutes is what the legislature created after that initiative. So things like that maybe I can remember that Casey wasn't around to even know about. So I'll try to help her out when I can.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rick. Is it New Orleans that has Napoleonic? Is there one state that still...
Louisiana.
Yep. I knew my friends that went there, and you're automatically admitted to the bar, I think, too. Representative Clayman.
First, Mr. Svobodny, it's a pleasure to be back. It's been many, many years since we were in the courtroom together, and it's good to see you here, and glad that you have not aged as much as I have. Just a couple of questions. First, in the context between kind of Anglo-Saxon traditions and Napoleonic traditions, we're kind of in that interesting place with this marijuana initiative where the legislature did make marijuana possession illegal, and so the voter initiative is essentially trying to roll back what the legislature hath done, which makes it even more complicated in some ways. That's kind of a question and kind of a statement, but your comment on that, and then I have one follow-up.
Through the chair, just kind of historically, I don't know how to comment about that other than to say historically, Ravenwood was decided before the present 1117, the drug statutes, which were done in Raven was in the 74, I think, maybe 75, and the structure of our drug laws comes in 1982 with the legislature and a model code dealing with drugs, and throughout the time that the legislature has dealt with it, there have been certain provisions that have been provisions throughout that have dealt with marijuana, and I'm sure we'll get into it later, but I think I think Ms. Wallenberg correctly stated the decision in Raven, but I think everyone's forgetting what happened after that. The decision in Raven was some amount of marijuana, an undefined amount of marijuana in your home for personal use, in a balance between the Alaska Constitution and health issues and public safety issues, balanced out on the side of saying the police there could not be a prosecution because the privacy provisions of the Alaska Constitution trumped the legislature's decision about public safety and health and social services issues in that narrow respect. That is an amount not defined for personal use. The legislature picked the number of 4 ounces for in something that was indicative of non-personal use in the home. And the Alaska Court of Appeals, in a decision called Noy, said, yeah, that was a reasonable thing for the legislature to do, to say 4 ounces was not indicative of personal use in your home. I don't know if that's an answer to
your
question.
And he has a follow-up, but just also during the Murkowski administration, there was a recriminalization effort. And I don't know if this is right, but I think the representative might have been referring a little bit to that, and I think it was in 2006, if I'm not correct. How does that factor in?
I do believe it was in 2006. I don't remember the bill. I remember the nickname to the bill, which was methawana, because it dealt with both methamphetamine and marijuana. It did make smaller amounts of marijuana. The legislature made very specific findings directed using research that occurred in Alaska about the social issues with marijuana, especially with youth, and made a decision that they were going that marijuana should be illegal. Let me stop there and go back to Raven. Raven said, we're making this decision today based upon the amount of THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, which I think around that time was like 18%. But we can revisit this. This is a decision based upon, you know, the likelihood of abuse at that point in time. The legislature 2006 was hearing, you know, received information about marijuana being at, you know, 27 THC being around 27%. Sometimes now some of these things from Colorado are coming in at 95% THC. So Raven said, we'll always revisit that. There was the ACLU sued the state of Alaska, saying the 2006 legislative changes should be stayed and there shouldn't be any prosecution of those cases. It went and the trial court said that was correct. I saw Mr. Guarnelli sitting back there. He represented the state in that case. It went to the Supreme Court, and to be blunt about it, they dodged the issue. They said there's no case in controversy. You just kind of brought this as a answering a legal question, but no one's charged with the offense. So that's where we're at right now. We have smaller amounts than before 2006 that under the existing legislation says it's legal.
Thank you so much, Mr. Savani. Mr. Klayman, Representative Klayman.
It's actually very helpful. Very helpful, but I actually have a slightly different historical memory, not relating to the 2006 action by the legislature, but as I recall back in the days when both you and I were younger and trying cases in the district court in Juneau, in the late 80s and early 90s, the 4 ounces in the home pursuant to statute implementing Raven was actually legal. And that was encompassed in the Alaska statutes. And this is a question of making sure my memory is tracking. And then in the early 90s, there was a ballot initiative before the public in which marijuana by public vote was recriminalized. It left open the question of Raven, but that did away with the 4 ounce home possession in the statutes. And I may be wrong, and that's why I'm asking you, because you were there too.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I don't remember, but you know what? I have a great history from where we were, you know, before Raven, which people don't remember that it was going to be about where we are with this initiative today, and then Raven came out, and I would be glad to provide it to you if you want it.
I do know there was an initiative, I believe in the early 90s, that was recriminalizing marijuana. That was I may be wrong on the statutory details, but I know there was that early 90s initiative.
Excellent. Madam Chairwoman.
So I was just wondering, after the Supreme Court dodged the issue, whether or not there have been any charges under the current statute for small amounts of marijuana, and if not, why not? Are there any Department of Law memorandums perhaps suggesting that such charges wouldn't go anyplace?
Madam Chair, the decision, I'm having a hard time answering this because I want to answer a question that you didn't ask. I think that it is incorrect that people have this idea that the police go out and investigate small amounts of marijuana cases. It is true that they get called to minor consuming parties and they find people who have small amounts of marijuana and they charge them. It is true that they come to automobile accidents and they find marijuana in the vehicle and determine that the person was under the influence of marijuana. But I know of not one time ever where the police have said, well, you know, this week is going to be go find small possession amounts and figure this out. We don't have, there is no written policy on dealing with the marijuana cases that come forward, but prosecutors like the police aren't going out and looking for those cases. They're a pain to deal with because there usually is about $100 fine, and you know you have a right to a jury trial, and it's not good use of state resources to be spending time in doing those cases. And if you look at the actual number of people incarcerated for the charge of possession of marijuana last month, that number is zero. There are people who are in jail where that's been part of another case, for example, driving under the influence. But if you look at just possession, the number is zero. So I guess I made a long answer when I could have said there's nothing in writing. It's generally in trying to husband our resources, the first area that we go to in the cases that don't get prosecuted. I really would like Ms. Schroeder to do her job.
Excellent. Okay, one more question, and then we'll turn to Casey. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rick, I really appreciate the context and the history. That really helped me, understand what we're up against. And this question, please feel free to answer questions I don't ask, but I think you get the gist of it. Has there ever been a case where the legislature has tried to define a law before the license was established? I mean, it seems to me, I've been trying to get my head around that, you know, how we do that. You know, we're talking about penalties and everything and something doesn't exist.
Actually, if I may, Madam Chair, could I ask, the answer to your question is I know of none, but I think there is a concern. And I don't know what the legal result of it is that Ms. Schroeder's identified about doing that.
Okay. Ms. Schroeder, first of all, welcome to the committee. We don't fight, and we're really happy. We're honored. This is your first time testifying. And so please proceed, if you wouldn't mind putting your name, even though we know you, on the record officially.
For the record, Casey Schroeder. I'm the Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And most of my comments are related to the defense section, but there were some other comments that fall outside of the defense section. Would you like me just to kind of walk through the bill as they appear in order, or?
What do you remember? So you've got, we're 15 minutes to 3 right now, so there's no question but that Representative Ledoux and I are going to be continuing Wednesday, Friday, et cetera, marching through the remainder of the testimony. I think we can say to folks on the line, Dennis Casanovas, Rochelle Young, Bruce Schulte, that we're going to invite you back on Wednesday in our individual committees. And thank you very much, and my apologies that we haven't gotten to you. But so with that, you've got 15 minutes. And so I would commend to you whatever you think in 15 minutes is most important for this joint committee to hear.
Okay, I'll start with the defense section. the defense section includes a defense for misconduct involving a controlled substance in the fourth degree. It's and under that statute, it's a felony to possess any amount of marijuana on school grounds, near a youth center, or on a school bus. As the defense section is written, it would apply to that section. And we just don't know, is that what you intended? Otherwise, if it's not what you intended, there probably needs to be a carve-out in that defense for that offense. And also, persons under 21 would be charged with the felony because the defense doesn't apply to people under 21, but people over 21, it would be fine. So there might be a little bit of a disparity there. And the defense also applies to manufacturing charges, so and that applies to both the individuals and to marijuana establishments. They both could potentially be charged with manufacturing. One of the things that is prohibited is manufacturing a Schedule 6A controlled substance through the use of a solvent-based extraction. That would be a manufacturing charge if it were brought. And it's covered by a defense for both individuals and for marijuana establishments. And again, is that what you intended? So that's just a question that we have. It's not clear. And in reading through this, you know, I understand that a lot of people were confused with the defense section, but then if you read the whole bill, you know, there's the repeal section, which kind of brings some clarity. You are repealing some of the initiative, but I would caution you about, before you charge ahead with that, repealing 1738070 may have other consequences besides criminal consequences. There's the regulatory context that may be affected by that significantly, so that just would be something to look at before doing that. And then the other thing, which is outside of the defense context, is the question that keeps coming up in our office, which is, what is hash? Yeah. So is hash marijuana? Because it's listed in under the bill, it's Schedule 6A. You've brought it down into the 6A, but it's listed separately. It's marijuana, hash, hash oil. But then the definition of marijuana that's changed in the bill potentially could include it, and then the definition of concentrates can include it there too. So it's kind of a circular type of reading you have to do. You have to read the definition, then you have to read the definition of concentrates, and then you have to look at the Schedule 6A. Is hash marijuana? I mean, I guess that's the question there. And then the other thing had to do with the marijuana container. So Section 11, it defines an open marijuana container. But then there's that end sentence that says, and there is evidence that the marijuana has been consumed in the motor vehicle. Mm. And we're not really sure what that means. This would probably be really hard to prosecute, so we're just not sure what the intent is there. So a little clarification would be helpful.
Okay.
And that's really all the comments about the bill.
Okay, I'm going to take questions from Ms. Schroeder and again to ask if you could kindly commend that to writing for us. Madam Chairwoman on the House side and I just conferred, and we agreed that we'll go ahead and do a joint hearing on Wednesday to take the remainder, and she'll chair. So we'll continue marching through what we're doing today, which is just, you know, getting the lay of the landscape. What do the state troopers have to say? What do folks from the Public Safety Employees Association have to say, the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll continue that on Wednesday. And but with that, questions for Ms. Schroeder. Yes, Representative Gruenberg.
You've been really fast. After you gave your name, you lost me.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting in this case, because your testimony is even more complex than anybody else so far. When you send us your written testimony, I think it's a good idea to contact our offices and the individual legislators themselves, not just the staff with due respect, so that we can really understand your concern, because I didn't get 1% of what you said.
Thank you. Fair enough. Questions from anyone else? From Mr. Savadny or from Ms. Schroeder? Yes, Senator Machicki.
I just have a little one, which is kind of on the whole motorhome issue in the state of Alaska. So if we regulate, like, alcohol, which is the intent, right? This, what is it? AS 2835029B sort of defines, well, essentially where alcohol can be kept and used involving a motor vehicle, but it talks about anywhere a license is required, okay? So you're camping out at the end of a road, keys are out of the ignition, motorhome's blocked up, it no longer requires a license, everyone can have a beer if they choose to, as long as they're not going to be driving, they don't go above the limit. It's just something we should probably focus on when we're thinking about marijuana as well, because if we're regulating like alcohol, it's something we need to consider as well. I mean, I think it only goes into kind of a recreational vehicle sort of thing, but it's what Alaskans do, right? So just a little minor point.
Absolutely.
But something that
you can drive it and then you stay in it, so it's sort of a residence and a vehicle all at the same time. Okay, any further questions? Yes, Representative Clayman.
Hopefully this is my last question. You raised the topic about hash and hash oil, and when you said that, I have then been trying to course through the language of the initiative, and my speed reading may have failed, but I didn't see any reference to hash or hash oil in the initiative. Am I missing something? I mean, compare what's going on here with the initiative and why you see that issue of hash and hash oil is a significant difference, if I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but if you see that as a significant difference between this proposal and the language of the initiative.
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, there is no specific mention of hash in the initiative. That's correct, and that's partly why there's some confusion. The definition in this bill lifts pretty much is a copy of the definition in the initiative for marijuana, which, again, still does not mention hash. Under current statute, hash is specifically excluded from the definition of marijuana, and hash is a Schedule 3A drug. So this bill brings it down from 3A to 6A, and so it's on the same level as marijuana. However, it's still treating it differently, you know, because it says marijuana. The definition of the Schedule 6A bill says marijuana, hashish, hash oil. So if you're listing it out separately, it implies that it's something different. However, one could argue that it is a marijuana concentrate, which is found in the definition of marijuana. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's a question.
And just a very short, Schedule 3A and Schedule 6A, I know 6A is generally marijuana, but what company does hash currently have under 3A? I mean, that's not the narcotic drugs, but that's because narcotics are 2A or Schedule 2, I think. Yeah. But what are some examples of Schedule 3 drugs?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, I believe a synthetic marijuana would also be in that grouping. And it's just based on a committee's decision about what the public risk is of a particular drug. So that's why it was classified that way.
Excellent question. So I'm going to go to Senator Coghill, and then something my office has been working on that we've done in years past for our committee members, and we'd love to share and work with you on it, is, you know, a binder that has all the classes, all the mental states, you know, some of the really pertinent things from Title 11. So you just have them, and you can flip through really quickly and sort of see, okay, this is what you're talking about. And then the penalties associated with the various misdemeanors and felonies, so you really understand what you're talking about. So we're working on that. We'd love to partner with Representative Ledoux on that, and I think that'll help us in future hearings. But Senator Coghill.
I just wanted to express my sympathies with trying to describe these things because, for example, in reading the definition of marijuana, knowing that you could transport, sell, or even gift an ounce, you have these derivatives, mixtures, preparation of the plant, and a salt. And we don't know what a salt is, for example. And so I think we just have to figure out if it's hash oil, And you could literally get a whole city high on an ounce over against an ounce of marijuana leaves, for example. What does that mean to this definition, and how does it, number one, work through personal use and then manufacturing use? It's so hard for us to figure that out. So I think that one was pulled out because it had been specifically named in statute as a different schedule. So I was sympathetic to that. But if we have to put it back into this, then we have to make other definitions for how we're going to deal with it. That's all. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that when I looked at the derivatives, the hash, the salt, the preparation of the plant, and the manufacture of it, of these compounds, it really doesn't tell us what those are. And yet they can use an ounce of it in whatever case. I mean, could it be an ounce in a Hershey bar, for example? An ounce of what? Right. And so that's what we have to think about.
Excellent point. And we'll hear on Wednesday from some of the folks that are going to be experts. So I hope Bruce and Rochelle and Karen are following some of these conversations. You know, the testimony about edibles and methods of producing marijuana, synthetic marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. It'd be great if you'd be willing to comment on that. I think Senator Coghill's right when I was asked why is hash butane oil specifically set aside. We know that is a dangerous method of manufacturing. That said, there may be other, and probably are, but dangerous methods that should have commensurate penalties, and we're not experts in it. So these are really good questions. And Madam Chairwoman, do you want to close?
I guess I was just thinking, had a comment question. If we're going to be implementing this initiative, legalizing marijuana use, what about the synthetics? I mean, are we going to have to do anything there with respect to the synthetic marijuana? I mean, if real marijuana is not going to be prosecutable, why would we necessarily want to make it a prosecutable offense to use synthetic marijuana, although I'm not sure why anybody would want to use it as long as the real stuff is available. But
excellent question, and again, Bruce, I know you've got some information, and I hope to hear about this, and this was, of course, a big part of the debate, and we'll hear from the initiative proponents and opponents about, you know, some of the chemicals, I think, some of the concerns about the chemicals in the manufacturing process. But I want to say thank you to everyone who's testified today. Thank you to our team of amazing staff for all you've done. Thank you, Department, our Legislative Legal Department, to Hillary Martin. You survived it. And Casey, you survived it too. So we'll see you back here on Wednesday then. And with that, we're adjourned.